a whole new podcast series, which we're dubbing the RaptorCast. I have Stephen Gillespie and Matthew Vernier with me today, and we're going to be talking about a couple different topics. Obviously, we're podcasting live on Google Hangouts, which is what we're going to start doing kind of to get people involved. So we're going to kick it off with anything and everything gaming, and kicking off with the game that everyone's loving to hate right now, Flappy Bird. What are you guys' thoughts on this game?
I was around an old housemate's house the other day. I forget the reason for being there. We were doing something. It seemed important at the time. And my friend Josh, his girlfriend, was just saying how she was playing this game called Flappy Bird and had uninstalled it because it was terrible. And then we turned around later only to find her playing it again. And I was like, okay, what is this? I need to try this. I played it for a bit, decreed, yes, this game is terrible. And ever since that point, my old housemates seem to be having some crazy high score battle over the internet in this monstrosity. I don't know. It's fine. It's not what I call a great game, but it's I kind of get the appeal, I guess.
I played it for 10 minutes and uninstalled it. I know, Matt. You just installed it. You were telling me earlier.
Yeah, you know, your Facebook feed blows up with, oh my god, I installed Flappy Bird. Oh, this is the greatest. You know, there's this attraction to simplistic gaming today because we've gone to the more complicated mainstream games that are today. So when people can kind of just pick up a game and play it, I think that really gets people involved and they enjoy that because, I mean, our mobile platform's with us everywhere. So when people have the ability to just kind of start a game up and, you know, as free as it may be, you know, you get up, just play it with a couple of apps, you know, they love it, you know, they eat it up, so. Yeah, I mean, I played it, you know, like I told you, you know, it's got the Mario side-scrolling.
It's got a lot of Mario going on, and that's been a point of controversy of, I mean, it's, I wouldn't say that it's stolen assets because they've changed them somewhat, but it's definitely very strongly evoking Mario, like especially Mario Bros. 3, with the pipe straight from it, and even the bird looks exactly like the fish from Mario 3. So,
and there was actually a game that was on the App Store. From what I read, there was a game on the App Store over 2 years ago that is basically Flappy Bird with original content, original artwork, and it's identical.
Oh, yeah.
And this gets $50,000 a day off of advertising.
Which is insane. Though that's kind of a good thing. Like, I like, I know that's such like a weird thing to say, but it's, there are so many games on iOS that I've really rebelled against due to, like, awful monetization. Like, I played through Plants vs. Zombies 2 last year, and that game was just such a disappointment to me because of all, one, I didn't think it was just as good a game as the one before, but then the free-to-play structure just destroyed it. And it's nice to see, like, you don't need to take advantage of your player base and, like, detract from the game to make a lot of money from it. And I hope that someone realizes that, like, just make a game that's popular and you can monetize it. I mean, like, it's advertising-driven, but the ads aren't particularly invasive. Like, it's not getting in the way of your experience, and they're clearly making a lot of money for it. So, I mean, that's the one good thing to come out of this.
It's like Dungeon Keeper. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
I've heard a lot about that, and the stuff I've heard just sounds atrocious.
It's terribly, terribly broken. Next up is Halo 2 Anniversary. If you guys want to talk about that for a second, I'll be right back.
Matthew, are you a Halo person?
No, I am. I really, really was. I still enjoy the core titles. 4... I feel like for that 3-4 jump, even 2-3, they were starting to get that, okay, we need to get this game out, we need to make sure that people get this game that they've been demanding, or even if it, you know, takes away from some of the greatness that could be. And that's what I felt for 3. overall, 3 I enjoyed before. I don't know, like, I just felt it was forced.
Well, I'm a big Halo person, big fan of the franchise. 3 is my favorite, actually, and 4 I liked a lot, but, I mean, 3 just has a special place for me. It kind of hit about the right time of when, like, 4-player multiplayer was a big thing, and that worked miles for it. Halo 2 is a game that I really like, even on a campaign basis. I think that campaign has a lot of issues, but I think fundamentally it holds up quite well, and though it's nowhere near as special as the Halo 1 campaign, because the Halo 1 campaign was just a landmark event, I think a lot of it would play better now. So, a HD update of Halo 2. I'm really down for that. I don't know what they'd do with the online, though, seeing as that's the mainstay for that game. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I'm sorry, what was that?
Because, I mean, the lasting impact of Halo 2 was obviously the online element of it. And for a lot of people, myself excluded somewhat, I mean, they don't care about the campaign at all. The only reason they really love Halo 2 is because it's multiplayer, which was fantastic. And that's not really going to carry the same appeal in a HD remake, because you don't need that again. I mean, that's been done again in Halo 3 and expanded on, and then changed in Halo 4 and Reach, etc.
I think it's a lot of nostalgia, too.
Yeah, but I mean, popular opinion on that game is that people don't like the campaign and like the multiplayer, and if you're just going to bring back multiplayer maps, like, you could do that.
See, I loved the campaign Halo 2. It was one of
I really like the Halo 2 campaign. I agree with you. I mean, it goes to hell at the end. Like, the towards the end, it goes really downhill. But there's a lot of that campaign that I really like. It's clearly rushed, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that with the... They did the reboot of the Halo Combat Evolved, obviously. And that I liked that, how you could switch between the old graphics and the new graphics.
Oh, that was a really awesome thing. I was really bummed out to hear that wasn't in Fable Anniversary, because that's such a cool feature. Because, I mean, I had the same thing, because, I mean, I played Fable back in the day, and I played Halo back in the day.
Yeah.
And when I saw the screenshots of the Anniversary one, I was like, this looks the same, because they've done a great job of managing to capture how you thought that game looked at the time. And it's only when you press that button, you're like, oh my god, this looks so much better.
I mean, I'm liking all the reboots that are coming out. Matt, you're playing the Tomb Raider right now. And Thief is coming out this month. They're just bringing out a lot of reboots, and I think that a lot of companies are doing a great job with it. Mm. But obviously, I'm sure we'll see some bad ones, too.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, maybe you guys don't feel the same way, but it's almost like the gaming is just more and more going towards the way that Hollywood runs, because... I mean, how many times have we all bought the Star Wars trilogy? You know?
I 3 times.
Yeah, and we're going to continue, because there's always enhancements. I mean, that's part of technology. And I for one, I think, you know, having that feeling over again for, you know, like buying Halo 1 HD Remake, like that was awesome, because... I mean, for probably the 3 of us right here, I mean, that was Xbox, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why you play the Xbox, and maybe Knights of the Republic, but... yeah, I mean, and when developers or company, when they sit down and they look at all that and like, well, you know, giving us another shot to feel that, get that excited again for that same thing, I think it's cool. And when I picked up, you know, 3 or 4 times, like, it's a cool feeling to go in the store and pick that game or the movie up again. So I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah, I think you're right on that, and I think it actually suits games more than it suits films, because, I mean, you do have this technology lockout of to go back and play Halo 2. I mean, luckily my 360 is backwards compatible, but if I upgrade to an Xbox One, then I'm locked out. And like really older games, I need to get out the console for that, and that's a hassle. And as long as they keep it affordable, having an update on the console, I mean, again, it goes back to, it's why I like the PC so much, is because most things you can keep going back to. But I do like it when they give them the care and attention they need, and if the game's worthwhile, it's nice to evoke the what you thought that game was like at the time, and it's... So like I went back and I was playing a bit of the... It's a much more recent game, but I was playing some of the Deus Ex Human Revolution Director's Cut. And that's a game that I really enjoyed when it came out, and I was hopping it again. And that's great because it's just little things like commentary and just hearing people talk about how they made the game and what decisions. That's fascinating to me. And that shows a reverence that I think the game deserves. So I'm all in favor for relaunching things. You don't have to buy them, and new games are going to keep coming out. So I don't see any real negative.
Yep. I'm with you there.
Yeah, that's the thing, too.
Done well.
You know, people, like, when they read that, oh, they're relaunching this, like, people just get, like you said, it's like, well, you don't need to buy it. Like, but the people that want to buy it will buy it, you know? And that's, you know, there's a lot of negative feedback in there, too, because there's a whole crowd of people that think it's just, you know, a big money scam, which, I mean, don't get us wrong, like, they're there to make money, and that's what they do.
Yeah,
but
that's games.
If you don't want it, fine. You don't need to buy it.
Okay. I know I'm excited for Titanfall. I don't know about you guys. Obviously, the big news of this week was that the 360 version's been delayed, which, well, I don't know how big a deal that's going to be.
It's not surprising. They haven't shown it at all, and it's kind of seemed to be like a little secret to them. They don't really want to show it because, you know, when they show it, everyone's going to be like, oh, this doesn't look good at all.
Yeah.
It's the same reason when people talk about, like, the Wii U version of Watch Dogs was a bit ropey. Like, that game's going to be Xbox One and PC.
Yeah. And then the specs were released, obviously. And you got to have a pretty nice system to be able to run it, that's for sure. $500-$600 system. Some of the lower-end systems are going to be left out or they're going to have to upgrade. But, you know, that's the nature of PC gaming.
It is, and if you're wanting to play Titanfall on a PC, if you're that into games that you want to play Titanfall, like, chances are you're going to have the Xbox One, or you've gone PS4 route, and never mind, you can't play Titanfall. Or if you're really into PC gaming and you want to play Titanfall, you probably have the PC that can handle it. And if not, you're going to have to upgrade, and you're going to have to upgrade soon enough because games are... Now the console tech has caught up somewhat to the PC tech. There's going to be a jump up in games, and you have to spend money to match it. That's how PC gaming works, guys. I mean, it's not going to change.
No, it's not. And there was just a little... That was released. Those specs were released, and a lot of people were like, well, my system can't run this. This isn't fair. And I'm like, well, come on.
I mean, I do get bummed out when games are poorly optimized. I mean, that is an issue. But as long as I don't feel like it's ripping me off, like, I feel like my computer could do this, but it's poorly optimized, so it can't. I'm fine with that. If it's supposed to give me this crazy next-gen experience, so it needs powerful tech, make it worthwhile. You make the tech worthwhile, that's fine.
It's like what we've come to expect from Crysis.
Yeah.
BioShock Infinite, have either of you played Burial at Sea?
No, I just, as I mentioned to you guys earlier, I just came off a podcast, a very long one, of Game of the Year Awards, and I've just spent a long time rallying against BioShock Infinite, so that game is very fresh in my mind at the moment. Managed to get it off our top 10 list, so I felt personally proud of that.
See, I love that game.
It's a good game, don't get me wrong, but I have issues with it, big issues, but it's great, it's enjoyable. I didn't play Burial at Sea, though, to answer your question.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't even touched it. I probably won't touch it either. For me, I couldn't. I'm one of the 1% in the world that couldn't get into Infinite. You know, there's just still something about the first BioShock for me. Two, I just couldn't stand.
Hey, as you can see, there's a big box of BioShock 2 behind me, so I quite like me some BioShock 2, but I think the BioShock 1 is, like, spectacular.
Oh,
and 2's not as good, but 2 gets, you know, like, underrated. That game's pretty good. It's better than Infinite. I mean, come on. But, yeah, BioShock 1 is just masterful. And I'm not appealed by Burial at Sea, kind of, because what I've heard of it is it kind of devalues Rapture a bit and feels a bit forced, and I don't really want that.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Although the story itself was just, it was as confusing as Infinite. I had to play it twice, and then it's another one of those, oh, okay, I get it moments.
Yeah, but is it like Infinite where the story isn't confusing as such, it's just kind of, it's a bit of a cop-out that they have just one narrative conceit which kind of excuses everything?
Well, honestly, I still don't understand the ending of Burial at Sea, so...
Well, it is episodic, so I guess you'll find out
it's very
soon.
It's kind of a shocker ending to the first DLC. The second one comes out March 15th or something like that. I'm excited for it. I love anything BioShock, and I love shooters.
I love shooters, which is why I wasn't that crazy about BioShock. No, I'm being mean. I apologize. I do really like that game. I don't want to come across as just crapping all over.
Or to get our out and talk and during some discussion. So.
Yeah.
Obviously, Nintendo's struggling.
Yeah.
Most recent news is, can you remember their CEO's name right now, president? He willingly took like
Iwata.
Yeah.
Yes.
A 50% pay cut because of how bad they were doing, and their stock dropped quite a bit. I believe they've officially named the Wii U a failure.
Yeah.
So, I guess the question is, what's next for Nintendo?
They've still got a lot of money. They've got a huge war chest from the Wii days, and what they need to do now is what everyone's saying. I feel like I'm just repeating it, but it's true. They need to invest a lot of that money and make smart business decisions, because they've got a lot of fallback. They just need to catch up with other companies and kind of stop being so Nintendo. I mean, it's a horrible thing to say, but they've got to operate like every other company does in the world. They can't just be like, we put out this tech so you can play our games, and when that fails, it fails bad. They've got to do smarter. They've got to buy other companies. They've got to become like a big profitable company, and then they can keep doing what they love doing.
So you're thinking maybe they need to step into the next gen for real?
No, I think that would be like an even worse move for them, because I think throwing another console into that space would create even more confusion, and I don't think anyone would really go for it. They need to incentivize you to buy their games more. There was that thing... There was a really big game in Japan that was a iOS game or a Facebook game, and put out by them or whatever. It might have been put out by somebody else, and then they made a fully-fledged version of it for 3DS, and that sold huge. And they've talked about maybe doing things like that. Like, they get you in with a little free iOS game, they're like, well, now you've enjoyed this so much, come for the full experience. And that's something that could work, and that's an interesting move, and they've got the capital to fund that kind of stuff.
We'll see.
I mean, I personally think they need to go Sega's route, and they need... I mean, could you imagine the storm would come upon if they decided out of the home console market, maybe stay with DS, because, I mean, they know how to do that pretty well, and then release those big titles on a Sony or a Microsoft platform or both. I mean, you... Right there, his 50% can go right back into his salary, because, I mean, that would just... The storm gates would open up. I mean, that's really, I think, what they need to do. They need to think about something like that.
That's a really interesting point, and I think that's something that, obviously, I think we would really like, because it very speaks to the consumer of, I really like Nintendo games, but I don't really like Nintendo hardware. Like, I haven't even picked up a 3DS yet. But I want to play loads of the games, but I don't like the machine. Like, I picked up a Vita because I like the hardware, even though the games aren't as strong as the 3DS games. But I don't know. I don't know if that's the best move for Nintendo financially. Because, I mean, Sega aren't doing great. And, like, a lot of the strength of Nintendo, of their games, is they make games that suit their hardware. And I don't know if they could work on this kind of schedule. And they haven't got that much experience with making these huge next-gen titles that we want and need now. It'd be interesting. I mean, it could work, but it would be a bigger leap than just, like, now Mario is on your PS4 and just play it.
Well, I mean, let's go back for a minute to E3 when they were first shown the Wii titles, and we found out those were actually just 360 and PS3 versions of the games. I mean, that kind of... You know, you kind of stopped for a minute and think, oh, I mean, why are they not showing live demos of these things right now? Like, is this, I mean, isn't this bad? You know?
And what was the game? Oh, it was Arkham Origins, wasn't it? That they're saying they're not putting out the DLC on the Wii U because there's no market there. Like, they put out the game on the Wii U, but they're not going to support it because it's just like there's no point. And that's a sad state for a console to be in.
That's something you don't ever want to really admit. But they're doing what they're doing. I don't know what they've got in the background that maybe they're talking about, thinking about doing. Obviously, time will tell what route Nintendo wants to go.
I hope they don't die. I really like Nintendo. They make awesome games.
I can't see that happening.
I agree with you.
Maybe they're going to drop down a bit, or at the worst, they're going to drop down and maybe downsize a bit. But I think then they're going to figure something out, and they're going to come back.
Yeah. I just hope this doesn't lead them down further what they've been kind of doing of really safe sequels and putting out the stuff that sells really well. But I mean, just it's quite a selfish point, but doesn't interest me. It's kind of a shame. Like, a lot of their big successes with the Wii and, I guess, with the Wii U, maybe, have been the games that I'm not that interested in. And that might make them a lot of money. I don't know.
They need new IPs. They need to step away from focusing on Mario and Sonic and maybe get some fresh content.
But the thing is, the reason those systems sell is for their strong first-party lineup. Zelda, Mario, right there. I mean, there's literally a Mario game every year. It's similar to, like, Call of Duty and, you know, the big franchise for the other systems. And Zelda, we're seeing probably a year and a half, 2 years. But, I mean, it's keeping them alive, like, that those first-party titles, no matter how many different branches of Mario there are, they seem to sell.
And they do keep putting out good ones of them as well. It's not just keep rehashing. Some of them admittedly are. Like, some of their franchises are getting a bit long in the tooth. I think 2D Mario is getting a bit stale. But the 3D stuff is just seeming excellent. Like, I don't have a Wii U, so I can play 3D World, but I read our site's review of it. I read a lot of other stuff on it. People like that game a lot, and it looks awesome. And I love the Galaxy games, and I want to play the hell out of that game, but I can't, which is upsetting.
Well, the 3D Mario World, my roommate has it. We have a Wii U, we have a Wii, we have a PS3, PS4, and a 360. All that's left is for me to buy the Xbox One. But, yeah.
I have a PS3 and 360 and a busted computer at the moment because my graphics card just broke.
But he had people over a couple days ago, and we were kind of switching off playing Super Mario World. And it's actually, even though it's a single-player game, it's actually really fun to play in a group.
Yeah, I mean, that was...
As long as you screw up, and it is a very fun game.
Yeah, I need to play it. I just wish I didn't have to buy that hardware. I mean, it goes back to the point you were making, Matt, that I want to play their game so bad, but I don't want to buy a Wii U. I would really like them to put out their games on platforms that I own. I would.
Yeah, they'd make a ridiculous amount of money, too.
Oh, yeah. But, like, going back to your point, Rutledge, like, oh, it's fun, you know, having a group of people. Like, I mean, is that really what you want your console to be based? Like, that's where you're having the fun, is, like, when you randomly have people over and then, oh, hey, we picked up a Nintendo game and it happened to be fun, you know? I mean...
That's what the Wii turned into, wasn't it?
Your first console is definitely not a Nintendo console. Like, we think, oh, hey, guys, like, we're gonna get a game, you know, LAN party going together. We're not playing Nintendo. We're playing something on the PS4 or the Xbox or PC. You know what I'm saying? Like, not in that tripod. And that's where they probably maybe need to start. You know,
I've been playing games with friends recently. It's been spelunky. Been spelunking. So put Spelunky on the Wii U, then you've got my money. I want Spelunky everywhere.
That is a pretty great game.
Oh, such a good game.
And as we kind of talk about the consoles, I guess it kind of transitions into, how about this whole debate with the frame rate between the Xbox and the PS4, how games on the Xbox are running at, what is it, 30, and PS4 is running 60. We got 1080p versus 720. 920.
Resolutions, it doesn't matter as much, but frame rate matters. Like, there is a big difference between 60 frames and 30 frames. And if I get the option of taking the 60-frame one, I'm going to take it every time. Like, that is a gameplay impact, and that's going to negatively impact on Microsoft if that's what's happening.
Go ahead, Matt.
It's almost like we have a reversal of console generations where now Xbox is getting the crap for what PS3 had to deal with in the beginning of the race, you know? And I felt like you could kind of see that even at Sony's press conference, you know, when they sat down, they listened to developers and what kind of machine do you want us to build. And Microsoft kind of threw a press conference together and was like, Xbox Skype, Xbox, watch TV, you know, and it's weird how that happens. You know, this one generation, you know, this company dominates, and then this next generation, this other company dominates. And I mean, that's what keeps them pumping. But I think Xbox seriously needs to do something because, I mean, Tomb Raider run at 60 frames and looks so gorgeous on the PS4. I mean, I haven't played the Xbox version, but every review I've read has said, if you have a PS4, buy it on the PS4, don't bother with the Xbox One.
Yeah.
That's not good.
I mean, it's still like, if you've got an Xbox One, don't be upset about it. You're still getting great games at a playable frame rate. It's just that if you're in the position to choose, like, choose the PS4. Because if you can get a better frame rate, then get that better frame rate.
Hands down, without a doubt. But I guess time will tell. Maybe Microsoft can push out some sort of a patch. Hopefully their hardware is not limited.
It's still good hardware. Like, that's a powerful machine.
And it may just be that they need some firmware updates to really maximize what developers can get out of the system.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm not an engineer, so I don't know how it all works.
I presume it's magic.
Background. But I guess I don't know what Microsoft is going to do to maybe rectify the situation.
I'm pretty sure in development there's just a switch, which is like just make frame rate good, and they just keep forgetting to do it on the Xbox One. 90% sure that's how it works.
Just one line of code.
Yeah, they're like, 60 or 30? Are we putting 30 again? Damn it.
Oh, I hit the 3.
Oh, it's so close to the 6.
Yeah, so, I don't know, time will tell. Hopefully Microsoft can turn it around. I'm buying an Xbox One either way.
Yeah, I want an Xbox One. I like Microsoft games.
Yeah.
The exclusives that save the consoles, in my opinion. If both consoles had the same games, I don't feel that people would even try and own both consoles.
No, I own a PS3 and a 360, and I want to be in the position where I own a Xbox One and PS4. I like having access to all the games. And I like that companies have exclusives, because it makes for really good games, like the best games on the PS3 and the 360 are usually exclusives, because like, we tailor this to the hardware, and this is trying to sell this machine.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Absolutely.
Apart from Dark Souls.
Kind of transition into the tech a little bit. Obviously, maybe this affects me a little bit more than most people. And if people haven't heard about it, we did post an article about it. But LogMeIn is no longer a free program. They've stepped away from their free model. So for those people who use LogMeIn to connect to their computer at home, obviously that's a problem. I have side clients on side clients on side clients. So I had a whole list of computers that I had access to that I could fix at any moment, but now I don't have that anymore. So
I'm going to play the role of the idiot listener here and ask the question, what is this thing that you're talking about?
It's essentially a program that you install on your computer. And so I install it, say, on my home PC here, and I can be at work with the click of a button and entering my login information, I can be connected to my computer as if I were sitting at it.
Sounds cool.
So that used to be free. It's not free anymore, so people are going to have to start finding some new programs.
How much is it now?
I believe it is like $30 a month for one computer.
That's a lot of money a month.
Pull it up. I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
That's prohibitively expensive.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, I mean, any time you have something that's free and all of a sudden all of your clients get an email saying, oh, hey, we're going to decide to charge you, I mean, that's really a tough pill to swallow. And that's a huge decision to make.
Or it's actually $100 for two computers for a year.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. And then obviously companies like SugarSync, who's like a Dropbox alternative, they stepped away from their free model. and there's a couple, it just seems that maybe the market is stepping away from our generation is used to free products. We're used to having limited free versions of products that we can test, and if we want to buy them, we buy them. But it seems like the market may actually be stepping away from that.
Do you reckon it just links to the fact that we're learning it's really hard to make money off the internet? That this model we thought of just like, let's just slap ads on everything, is not working out as great as we thought it would?
Yeah. And I think that's a good point there, too, is that, you know, with the advent of Adblock and various other programs, obviously, I know we hurt a bit from it because we lose about 25% of revenue.
Yeah, turn off your ad block, people. If you like the content you're reading, turn off your ad block because you are giving nothing to those people that you are looking at their content.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually going to reach out to Adblock this week and see if we can get our site whitelisted. So, if we get whitelisted, then that'll be good, and we can start putting money towards more giveaways and stuff. But right now, we're good.
Well, you know, it's interesting that we're talking about, you know, revenue with ads and how, you know, we can't just put up ads and make money. But yet we go back to our point earlier with the bird game.
Flappy Bird.
Flappy Bird.
That's doing it. That's
and
true.
And that's doing good based on ads. You know, isn't that crazy?
I think, yeah, that's just the thing of just, like, people realizing how many hands that thing is going in.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I want this person to see my advert. That's not a sustainable business strategy, but it's working out bloody well for them at the moment. It's... Good on them. Good job, Vietnamese developer behind Flappy Bird.
I mean, he's making, let's see, 50,000 times 31. He's making $15 million a month off of that.
Not bad.
Crazy.
Well, not in February, but in many months.
Yeah.
A bit of a low month. He's going to be hurting in February. That short month's going to really get his pockets dry.
Oh, man, $13
million. It's like, it's not enough.
Oh, it's not enough.
I only have one private jet. I need two.
Flappy Bird 2 out next month.
Now you can go inside the pipes. Underwater, yeah. Flappy Bird.
Oh, God, don't get
it. Original.
Dude, like Flappy Fish or some shit now.
There's going to be just DLC obstacles like fed off of pipes. Here's a mountain.
Oh, internet. You're so silly. Here's one that's probably going to resonate a little bit more with Matt than with myself or you, Steven. But the state of Kentucky here in the United States obviously just
my favorite state.
Oh, man. The state of Kentucky just passed a law that makes computer programming a, like, here in the States, for anybody who doesn't know, obviously states require that you take a foreign language for, I believe, 3 years in high school. Now, the state of Kentucky actually has made that, has made a modification of that where if you learn a programming language, they treat that like a foreign language.
That's great.
Yeah. So I think that's going to change the market a bit, maybe get more people out there. And Chicago, obviously that's where Matt and I are located right now, they just made computer science a educational requirement. So instead of students maybe missing out on learning how to use computers and then getting put into the workforce and not knowing what to do, they now have the ability to learn computers at a young age and be familiar with it.
Yeah, it's long overdue. I mean, that's a huge breakthrough. I know when I was, you know, when we were at DeVry Rutledge, I mean, I wish I had experience in programming in high school or even before that, you know. It would have made our job a heck of a lot easier, but I mean, this, the world that we're in right now, a new language such as programming, any programming language, is definitely a second language. I mean, technology is more and more heavily involved in everything that we do every day, that you need to know how that works. And I think it's great. I think the educators are going to see how much of a difference it's going to make for kids. And, you know, the ability, you know, problem solving skills, you know, just reading code and then just implementing it in different ways. I mean, it's just going to open up a whole wave of, you know, great ways to learn. And I'm so excited. I think this is going to start a domino. Kentucky, Chicago. I mean, pretty soon it's just going to be statewide and hopefully worldwide. It's going to be required. It's awesome.
The only thing I would say against it, and this is kind of still a positive, is I wish they wouldn't tie it in with the language thing. I wish they'd separate it, because, I mean, it's still really important to learn second languages, and I think a lot of people would be like, I don't want to learn French, I'm going to learn programming instead, where realistically I prefer them to do both. So just make programming, just do it, and then have the language. Separate that.
I'm with you there. Foreign languages should still be a requirement, some sort of... Because obviously we're in an international world now. It's not like...
I'm in England, for example.
We're maybe 40 years ago, you know. So having the programming language as a possibility is a very good thing, because it gives people who maybe wouldn't have even looked at programming and who would be good at it an opportunity to do something like that. But you're right, it does draw away from the learning aspect of maybe getting to know a little bit more about other cultures.
Yeah.
Because that's part of the whole learning the foreign language thing, is you're learning other cultures, too.
Yes, I think that's a very good point.
Obviously, we're kind of an international team here at TechRaptor. We've got me in Australia, we've got you in the UK, and I think we've got somebody somewhere else, I just don't remember.
We have a man deep in Russia, but we're not allowed to talk about him.
Soviet Russia.
Yeah, he's deep in Russia. Undercover story. It's going to come out next week, maybe next year. It's going to blow your mind.
It's probably about the Sochi Olympics.
Yeah, probably. It's Sochi Olympics. Less sponsoring.
I saw a picture on Twitter this morning that one guy couldn't get out of his bathroom, like the door locked, and he couldn't get it to open. So naturally, he just busted through it as an Olympian.
He's an Olympian. You can't lock an Olympian in.
Oh, man, that's kind of a joke. and then on the mobile front, maybe this applies a little bit more to the United States than elsewhere. T-Mobile is kind of making a grab for the market right now. Do you?
Yes, we have T-Mobile. They're a thing over here. I can join this conversation. Yeah, T-Mobile. I know about that.
Do you guys have Verizon, too?
Nope.
Okay, that's a United States only thing.
It's a guy on Wake.
Obviously, the biggest mobile provider is Verizon. Verizon here in the United States.
Verizon.
And T-Mobile's kind of making a play for the market right now. And the way they're doing that is they actually just... It was announced at CES, and we have news about it on the site. They announced that they will pay for your cancellation. So if you cancel Verizon to switch to T-Mobile, they'll pay off the $200 fee or whatever. On top of that, they bought over 3.4 billion dollars worth of Verizon's LTE coverage. So now they're almost on par with Verizon. They're cheaper than Verizon, so they're making a play for the market. But on the other side of the mobile front, we have AT&T, who has just gotten a patent to throttle your web browsing on your phone. And the reason that's important is the net neutrality. Obviously, this is something I've been heated about. If people have followed the site for as long as I've been running it, I went through that month there where I probably wrote like 6 CISPA articles. I'm huge on net neutrality. But the reason this is important is this kind of paves the way for Verizon and AT&T to basically say, all right, CNN, you pay us X amount of money, and we will throttle MSNBC's traffic. So if a Verizon user or AT&T user wanted to visit the MSNBC site and CNN paid Verizon for them to throttle it, you'd get a slower connection speed to those websites. And ISPs have been toying with that as well. It's just, it's bad. I don't like it. So, and Stephen, you're pretty lucky. From what I've heard over there in the UK, you guys don't really have too many issues with the internet and trying to regulate it.
Seems okay. I use it. Seems fine.
Have no problems.
You play on the internet every once in a while.
I have been on the internet, I'm willing to admit that, and it seems to go fine.
What's it like?
It's big. Wide, perhaps.
Worldwide.
I wouldn't go that far. I've only seen it in the UK. I don't know if it's spread out of here yet.
Oh, man, that's good. I
hope we get that over here soon.
It's going to change. It's going to change your lives. It's great.
No, but T-Mobile, yeah, that's huge. I think that's good because it brings out competition. I just kind of wish we would just become a world without contracts and you can kind of just trade your phone in and get a new phone when you want. I think we're slowly progressing to that. But we'll see. T-Mobile just made a huge dent, though. They scared the heck out of those other two companies. Well, three. Sprint is a company, too.
I think part of the reason that there are contracts is so that they can say, all right, you're on a 2-year contract, you have to pay X amount extra a month to pay for the phone that you just got. And that's because phones are $700 on their own, you know.
That's so expensive.
We need the hardware to become cheaper before that can really be universal, in my opinion. Cool. You guys have anything else you
want to
talk about?
Did you guys read anything about the new Gears of War and how they will have 8 different directions they can go?
Eight directions? What? As in that it's not D-pad now?
Like... No, I think they just want it to be a worldwide game, a worldwide web game.
Oh, excellent. I told you that stuff's going to catch on. they're making a new Gears of War, aren't they? I like Gears. Not as much as Rutledge, apparently, but...
Yeah, there's a chainsaw on the back.
Yeah, I mean, Gears 1 is awesome, Gears 3 is awesome, Gears 2 is kind of a mess, but I still like the series. I don't really want a new one.
Show off.
I need to put batteries in it so I can be like, pew, pew, pew.
That was good. That sounded just like it.
You don't need batteries, actually. Just do that.
Yeah. Just run around the house. Pew, pew, pew.
And are we excited about a new Gears game? Does that interest you, or me, or him?
Gears 1, phenomenal. Gears 2, phenomenal.
Gears 2 is terrible. That's not lies to our
Gears
audience.
Gears 2 was not phenomenal.
Gears 2 is kind of a bad game. We can finally admit that.
I like the single player. I thought the multiplayer was terrible.
I hate this. I never played a multiplayer, but I really dislike that campaign.
Gears 3, I thought was the worst out of all of them.
I love Gears of War 3, though.
I see, and I'm with you. I love 3, too. I love 1. I love 3. 2 is just there.
I wasn't actually in a Judgment, either.
I didn't play Judgment, because, again, I didn't feel the need to play Judgment. I don't need more from this series. I really like the series, but it's done. It's one of the series that kind of defined the last generation, and I think it should stay there. Like, just core cover shooting doesn't stick anymore, because games have iterated on that, and that's what Gears is. And when it tries to go away from that, it doesn't do very well.
Yeah, it can't be the next Call of Duty.
Oh, no.
Well, we hope not. We don't want another Call of Duty.
We don't need another.
Hey, if it's good, it's good.
I mean, I'm sure, I hope Epic has... you know, more ideas than...
Yeah, because, I mean, people keep accusing Epic of becoming now just a tech company and not making games anymore, and they keep being like, no, we've got loads of games coming out, we just don't want to tell you about them. Fortnite, that's a game, guys.
One of the most widely used engines.
Yeah, and all they need to do is do what they did last generation. I've put out a game early on that's just like, look at this engine, then everyone will use it. And they haven't done that yet. And they need to do that. So hurry up, Epic, and put out a game.
I believe their new Unreal Engine is in progress, from what I understand. Obviously, the guy who was the face of Gears of War, Cliffy B. Cliffy B. From what I've heard, he's starting his own company. So
yeah, he's doing his own thing now. Loads of people have left Epic, though. Loads of the big guys there.
I believe Joe, what's his name? Whoever was in charge of everything is still there, obviously. But a lot of the team that worked on Gears, I believe, is gone.
I'm bummed out about what happened to People Can Fly as well. One, I hate that they got their name changed, because People Can Fly was a great name for a studio. And them being saddled with Judgment was really sad to me, because I really liked Bulletstorm. I'm not going to say it was an amazing game, but it was really fun, and it was somewhat different. And there's some talent there, and I'd like to see them go on and do more things, and it seems like they're just being shoveled with what the main guys don't want to do.
Yeah. I agree with you there. Bulletstorm was nothing spectacular, but it was enjoyable.
Yeah, it was a really enjoyable game, and like one of the most not interesting, like from a like philosophical point, like there's no big message to it, but like gameplay wise, one of the more interesting shooters I've played.
Because yeah. You basically spent the game trying to find different ways to kill.
Yeah, they made a linear shooter really enjoyable with their skill kill skill headshot thing. Yeah. That was the official name, trademarked.
Hashtag trademark.
Yeah, what about, you guys excited for Two Human 2?
Sorry, what?
Yeah.
They're making it they're even more human?
No.
Are they going to call it Two Human but have the two as a two? If so, I might buy it, because that sounds amazing.
I remember playing the first one, I don't remember anything.
Only if this means they can put out Free Human, like, the year after, then... I didn't play Two Human. It looks crap, so I kind of ignored it. I know that I play crap games sometimes, but nah, Two Human.
Yes.
I hear there was a long death animation.
It was just a mess.
Yeah, I don't know. Are they making another one? They said it was going to be a trilogy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's about 5 years ago.
Oh, God, I can't even remember. It must have been 2007 or 2008, Two Human. Maybe 2008, I'd say.
It was early Xbox 360, I believe.
Yes.
It was supposed... I think it was 2008. Yeah, 2008.
That was one of Microsoft's big exclusives.
Yeah. Great job, Microsoft.
Yeah, I mean, if... Anything else?
No. No other breaking news?
Not that I can think of, obviously. Excited if there's anything breaking, it'll be there.
I played some games that came out recently. They were pretty good. But if you wanna read the Broken Age is pretty good, go to the site and you can read what I have to say there. I'll be posting up a review for episode 2 of The Wolf Among Us, which is another great episode, not as good as the first. It's a bit slight. Not much happens. But it puts the story in a nice place. And that series is still looking really promising and really cool, and the aesthetic and the mood of it is just awesome. Like, it evokes this great noir, and Bigby is still another... He's coming across as a great character, and I like this thing they're doing where they're tying the gameplay to his character flaw, which is that he's trying to keep his inner beast caged, and they do lots of nice things where it gives you the option to let loose and be the wolf or not, and they keep it going. They're like, oh, you don't want to hit him? You sure you don't want to hit him? You sure you don't want to hit him? And that works out pretty well. And I didn't hit him, so I feel good about myself.
Is it bad that it took me until episode 2 to realize that Bigby, as his name, actually meant Big B Wolf?
Like, yep. I'm not going to say that's a bad thing, but well done for finally realizing.
So, alright, well, let's wrap it up. Obviously, this will be on the site for anybody who's following. It'll be... on YouTube, we're going to put it up on the site. We're going to try and get it on iTunes. iTunes has not been cooperating with the way we've been doing podcasts.
But take that, iTunes.
Yeah. apparently it's the way to do podcasts. So I got.
Well, if you like podcasts on iTunes, then I recommend finding the Critical Path podcast. Just throwing that out there. Just if you like myself, which I don't care, just find it, download it. It's okay. I'm on it. Enjoy it.
Awesome. So we're gonna wrap this up. I'm Rutledge.
I'm Matt.
I'm Steven.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Later.